Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
It's 5 at 5 with Mully and Hall, where we debate the top 5 sports stories of the day and then open it up to you, the Chicago sports fan. Call us at 312-644-6767, or you can tweet your thoughts at Mully Hall. 5 at 5 with Mully and Hall starts now.
Now that the Cubs have been eliminated from the playoffs for the first time since 2014, what word best describes their 2019 season, and what will go down as the biggest reason that they missed the postseason?
Yeah, I think melancholy this morning is how I'm feeling, but that implies that there's not a real reason behind it. It's just sort of a reasonless feeling. There's a lot of less words. There's a lot of joyless, cheerless, I think. Dispirited would apply to this season. But for me, honest to God, from top to bottom, because of all those reasons, and because I like the word, I'm going with grim. Thought it was grim. I thought from the moment it started, there was this kind of faded feeling to the whole thing, and it was a difficult season all the way around. The biggest reason, I mean, we can pick apart everything. I mean, you could make an argument about any element of the team, but I'll go with hitting. I think that they had a lot of opportunities with runners in scoring position throughout some of these games. And for whatever reason, they just weren't able to kind of cash in and get the job done. And I heard Joe talk about hitting is the problem earlier with Lawrence. And I'm going to go with Joe. I'm not going to say it's the lineup. I'm not going to say that it's management. I'll just go with hitting and have a smile on my face.
Well, I'm glad you can smile because if everything's so grim.
You think that's a bad word for
no,
it?
No, I think that's a good word. I'm not saying it's a bad word. It's your word. You're allowed grim. I'm going to go with confounding because this team was hard to figure from the beginning. And there were the road Cubs and there were the home Cubs. And we spent all summer trying to figure out why that was the case. Why could they win at home at Wrigley Field, be one of the best teams in baseball? At one point, they had a second number of victories in the National League at home besides the Dodgers. So I would say confounding. Because of that kind of disparity. And as far as the biggest reason, I'm with you with, and Joe explained this well, and he has been consistent. When you look at their ups and downs throughout the lineup, they were at times good enough to score 10 to 13 runs. And remember that explosion against the Pirates last time they were at Wrigley Field? And then they would get shut out twice in a row, and you couldn't figure it out. I think Chris Kamka had a stat over the weekend that at one point, a third of the Cubs' runs came in 23 of their games.
That's incredible.
That is an incredible kind of distribution of runs. It's feast or it's famine, and that's confounding because you have an uneven lineup, and they have to address the balance throughout the batting order. And I think that bothered Joe as much, if not more, than a bullpen that really blew 28 saves and a starting pitching rotation that aged in front of us. And I think Pakoda turned out being closer to being right than being wrong. But overall, I thought it was the hitting, and it was overall a very confounding season.
Well, if there was one word that I would use to describe it, and particularly in reference to the stretch run here, it would be embarrassing. When you look at all of the talent on this team, I mean, on paper, talent-wise, this team blows away the Brewers. They blow away the Cardinals. When you're looking at 1 through 25, you're looking at the payroll and the experience, the fact that this group has won a World Series together, and then they go and lay an egg like this down the stretch run, and they've had problems on the road all season long. Those have been well documented. I would say it's embarrassing. And I think Theo Epstein, when he's on the station today at 2:00, will probably use words similar to that. Maybe not flat out come out and say it, but Theo can be very candid at times. So that wouldn't surprise me either. I'm very much looking forward to hearing that today. The biggest reason they missed out on the postseason, I think it's probably the inconsistency in the lineup. We all knew the bullpen would be a problem coming into this season. I mean, halfway through that first road trip when they start off, 1-6, we knew the bullpen would be an issue. We all figured the rotation would kind of peter out toward the end of the season with the age on some of these guys. But the offense was one thing I thought would improve from last year because of how up and down they were throughout 2018. And there was the call for urgency. They replaced the hitting coach. They're putting emphasis on different things. And I think the up and down nature of the offense this year was something I didn't expect. And Joe said something to that effect yesterday. He thought that they would hit their stride at some point and they would put up a sustained run of, you know, putting up 7, 8, 9, 10 runs a game. And I expected it. Joe expected it. I think a lot of us expected it. And it never happened. So I have to boil it down to one thing. I would say it would be the offensive inconsistency.
Well, if I can cheat a little bit, I'll use a combination of this has been frustrating and underwhelming, both of the two, because you have the expectations that you had, and you were hoping last year was a one-off in terms of how far this team, with all the talent it has, can go in the postseason, and they didn't even reach the postseason for the first time in this championship contending window. So it's very disappointing. The biggest reason I'd say is what they did on the road, because it's been a whole combination of things that have gone wrong for the Cubs throughout the season. You can look at the starting rotation issues, the inconsistency there. They have an aging starting rotation, the bullpen inconsistency there as well, and the offense that just would go dead at times. And it was mostly on, it seemed as if it happened on the road. So I'm going to say all-encompassing, how they played on the road is what killed them.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Mitch!
It's an honor to be
Mitch
here.
Mitch Rosen, our boss, has decided to sit in. He's
Capo,
instructed us. He is.
Welcome back.
Thank you. The one word I would say going in and remains is uncertainty. Going into the season, is Joe your manager next season? Is he not? Is Yu Darvish going to have a good season? Uncertain. He had a great second half. I think everybody knew that. Is John Lester getting older? So when I think back at this season, it's the uncertainty of the season. I will tell you, as someone that observes and watches and mostly listens to a lot of games, I think they were compelling. I think we'd come in some days and go, oh, the season's over. And then 2 days later, man, they're winning. You know, this guy's playing great. He's hitting. So I think they kept fans, for the most part, until the Cardinals series last weekend, pretty compelled and pretty interested. So there was always a reason to listen and follow this team. But if there was one headline, one word that comes to mind, my mind, it was the uncertainty of the season.
That was a great question, and I appreciate it.
Theo Epstein flew to Pittsburgh to refute rumors that he would return to Boston to lead the Red Sox. He declared the Cubs would be in position to contend for a World Series in 2020, but wasn't comfortable yet discussing Joe Maddon's future. What was your biggest takeaway from Theo's comments?
Biggest takeaway is probably the fact that he wanted to get in front of this a little bit, and he wanted to make people believe that, as he did, that the Cubs can contend next year. I think that might be, as we're sitting here today, a tall order and difficult to kind of see what he sees. But I don't know that I would bet against Theo Epstein. The fact that he went there and wanted to get in front of the Boston rumor, I think, is interesting because it says that he is committed to winning in Chicago again. And when he's committed to something, he's not one you want to underestimate. And I that's why I can't sit here today and tell you that it's not going to happen, or it's something that, you know, deserves the cynicism. I think today is a grim day for Cubs fans, and it's a day that is melancholy. And there's a lot of things about, you know, Joe Maddon leaving that, you know, you don't feel very good about. But I think that he went to Pittsburgh, Theo, to kind of reassert the fact that, you know, there could be this awkwardness that is accompanies the end of the Joe Maddon era. Him not being willing to address it kind of addresses it in its own way. He could have said there's nothing to it. You know, we're optimistic, just as Joe said about him coming back. Didn't say all those things. We can see read the writing on the wall. But what Theo wanted to do was even say, I think, even though all that stuff is happening, all that change will occur, there'll be other changes, but everything's in the context of he's committed to win again, committed to getting back to the playoffs as soon as next year.
Yeah, I mean, my biggest takeaway, and I know this is maybe looking at it, you know, a little twisted, but if Theo is back, Joe is gone. And Theo coming and announcing that he's back is almost Joe's last stand. That was it. That was the last shoe to fall in terms of Joe's fate, that if Theo had left, maybe there was an opportunity for Joe. But Theo coming back means the plan is in place. There is a plan going forward, and it won't include Joe Maddon, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think my biggest takeaway from Theo yesterday and him, you know, getting ahead of this thing and saying, yes, I will be back next year, was the Joe Maddon element as well. But the first thing that came to my mind is that, you know, back to the word I used to describe it, he's probably, you know, his pride probably took a big hit this year with all of the money that they spent and all of the free agents that didn't pan out and some of the other moves that they did or did not make.
And the way he's being questioned. I mean, there are people...
For the first time in ages.
Yeah. People are flat out, and they're trying to connect. Well, look what happened in Boston. Theo Felp, you know. So
yeah, I mean, that's apples and bowling balls.
What about Carl Crawford?
Yeah.
Everybody wants to bring up his
bad free agent signings. But that's what I'm saying. Yeah, that's the sort of thing.
Sure. And I think that with his pride that he has and looking at this totally underachieving roster now for the second year straight, you could argue the third year straight, but I think that he sees this as another huge task. You know, and it's different than rebuilding from the ground up, which is what he did in the first place when he got here. Now it's a little bit of a different beast that he's got to tangle with a lot of these big contracts and a lot of players on the table that, you know, maybe you do have to trade one of these big core four guys if you want to try to replenish the pitching staff, because I think that's the biggest glaring weakness going forward is going to be how are you going to fill all these innings in the starting rotation? Because Cole Hamels is not coming back. John Lester is not the same guy he was. You pencil in, you know, Darvish and Quintana as guys who are good, and in Darvish's case has been very good in the second half of the season, but they're not exactly workhorses you're going to rely on for 185, 190 innings per year. So you have a lot of innings to fill in the starting rotation. You've got a lot of work to do with the bullpen. I mean, the only three guys I can pencil in the bullpen right now, unless I'm missing any, are Rowan Wick, Kimbrel, who will be here for better or for worse, Bradwick and Kyle Ryan. That's four guys. You're going to have to fill out that bullpen. You're going to have to fill out the pitching staff. Theo's got a lot of work to do, and I think he sees this as a big challenge, a different challenge for himself, and he wants to stay here and face it head on. I think that's admirable.
My biggest takeaway was Theo totally shut down this idea and these inkling that the Cubs' window of contention is over and it's closed. He said the goal is to win a championship next year. And of course, what else you'd expect him to say is what you could say to that. But I like it. I like that he is in championship mode, and it's still at the forefront here. And he's staying. He shut down those Boston Globe rumors, and so he's in this to win this. And it's not over for this Cubs team. This Cubs era has not come to a close.
I also call this glass partition here the window of contention when we're here from 5 to 9 each morning long.
You look good in the morning, Kevin.
Thank you very much. Mm-hmm. I've heard that before.
Okay. I believe Theo is not going to Boston. And I also believe that Theo and Jed, because I look at them as a team in terms of baseball, are two of the brightest minds in baseball. I think, obviously, in this day and age, there are a lot of bright minds in baseball. You can look 90 miles north and what happened in Milwaukee, and there are a lot of bright minds in baseball. But I still think at the end of the day, these are two of the brightest minds in baseball, and I think they'll recover quickly. I also listened to Joe with Lawrence yesterday, and Joe, I think, is a very sincere man, and he didn't have to say this. And when Lawrence asked, what's your relationship with the front office, and the word brilliant came up twice, I really believe Joe meant that, what he said, brilliant. And I think these guys are brilliant, and I think they will do their best to pull it together for next year. So I believe in Theo and Jed that they will have their best intentions, and I believe the Cubs will contend next year for a division title and beyond.
You know, as smart as you guys are, that might be the best question you've ever asked. I'm serious. I had never really contemplated this question.
Joe Maddon went on the Score Tuesday with Lawrence Holmes and declared his desire to return as manager while also insisting there were two sides in control of that decision. Do you believe that? Would he stay if wanted? And would he bolt if they didn't? Where will he wind up next year?
It was a great interview. It was great to hear Joe. Joe and Lawrence have developed a really nice rapport, and it was a little upsetting to the idea that we couldn't develop a rapport with him because Joe can't get up in the morning and come on the morning show, which is a pity. Would have loved to have talked to Joe at some point in his tenure with the Cubs on the air. Yeah, I would say that it's their decision. It's not Joe's decision. Will Joe have options if indeed he's not wanted back here? Yeah. It's not, though, a two-way street. It's not like Joe is going to secretly go out and get a job while the Cubs are deciding what to do with him. I think the Cubs have a pretty good idea what they're going to do with him, and I think that that Joe's got a pretty good idea what that is, and he's going to try to find another job because he doesn't want to stop. But it doesn't mean that he gets to much of a say in his future here. That will be decided for him, sadly.
Great interview. Lawrence does a terrific job asking Joe the right questions. There's definitely a comfort level, a trust level, and a rapport that I'm going to miss. And I just hope Lawrence doesn't go with Joe. I hope he stays. But I think that's been really good radio. Great for the station. Joe used the word optimistic, and I think that he clarified later because he was optimistic about his own future. And I think he knows something. I just do. I think his agent is probably in conversations. This is total speculation, but it's probably, you know how this works. It's third-party channels. They talk, and you get a sense of where you're wanted. And Joe's not going to be unemployed for long. Maybe that's what this weekend is about. Maybe the plan is being put in place. Like, how are we going to handle this? And that's why it's so awkward. We've seen it happen with Ozzie Guillen, who had a job before he was done in managing the White Sox. He won a World Series too, by the way. And he left for the Marlins. Maybe Joe knows where he's going to be managing next year. What's really awkward about this, and what I really want to reserve judgment on, is this. If he goes to the Angels, like a lot of people speculate, Brett Ausmus has a job right now. Brett Ausmus would be one and done. He would be facing the same fate that Ricky Renteria faced with the Cubs. Joe Madden would be replacing a guy that gets fired to hire Joe Madden for the second time. Is that difficult to live with for a guy like Joe Madden, who I think comes across as a terrific guy, as a good human being? But if this happens again, are you going to have questions about that? And I think maybe Joe has to consider some of those things. Angels, Phillies, Mets. Those are all three very good possibilities. Ken Rosenthal mentioned the Angels possibility yesterday. He went strong with that.
Yeah, he did.
Ken Rosenthal doesn't go strong with things unless he knows something. So I think that Joe will be out of work for all of 5-10 minutes.
Sure. I think he's gone, and I've pretty much stuck to that all season long. You mentioned some of the landing spots there, David. I think Philadelphia would make a lot of sense. I hadn't really considered the Mets, but they've still got a pretty solid little foundation going on over there. The Angels, of course, he's got history. He's a California guy. It would make sense there as well. I don't think there's any apprehension for Joe if it is indeed the Angels and he's going to take Brad Ausmus's job. I mean, this is pro sports. You know, you can't afford to have feelings for guys that you're taking their jobs. You know what I mean?
You're right.
As long as those checks still cash.
Isn't that odd, though? Wouldn't that be odd?
I think it speaks to, you know, the level that Joe Madden is viewed in Major League Baseball, that this would be the second time now that he would come in and usurp a position from a guy who is under contract, who is already there and established. Ausmus not as established, just one season so far, but, you know, it's a 3-year contract, so he is under a contract. Where will he end up next year? If I had to put money on it, I would say Philadelphia. It's not going to be for $6 million, but I'm sure he's going to be very well compensated. I would not be surprised if he continues to be the highest paid manager in baseball. Not $6 million, but I think he's going to get some a good chunk of change out in Philly, because they are coming off another, similar to the Cubs, a very disappointing, underwhelming season, and God knows they love to throw their money around out there as well.
I don't believe both sides are in control of this decision. I think it's all the Cubs front office and their decision. I understand Joe Madden wants to come back. I'd like to see him stay, but this is all in the control of the front office. So I did not buy into that. And I think he would stay if asked to. And he's going to get a job. He's not going to be sitting for long. I do agree with that idea. I could see, you know, he made comments about San Francisco when they were out there to play the Giants the last time. That could be a landing spot. The San Diego Padres are a rebuilding team. They could point to him and say he could do what he did with the Cubs, with our organization. So those are two organizations I think he could land on. So I think he's going to end up on the West Coast if he doesn't return with the Cubs.
I think, you know, the reason you have contracts is because you have leverage, right? So his contract, I think, is up in 3 days. Usually these contracts expire once the baseball season is done. So the baseball season for the Cubs is done Sunday. I think Joe, it's his destiny. It's his choice. If the Cubs, if they wanted him back, I think they would have done a deal or said, Joe, we're doing a 1 or 2 year, we're offering you an extension. They obviously have not offered him anything, I don't think, in my opinion. So I think Joe has all the leverage in the world, and he'll go find another job if he wants it. We're forgetting one team, and this is a shot in the dark. This is my opinion. Brooks Boyer, don't drive off the road when you hear this. But are we going to see Ricky Pardue? Are we going to see Joe possibly on the south side of Chicago? We all know the White Sox have a talented team, a lot of up-and-coming players. They're going to have the batting champion. They're going to have, you know, the rookie of the year, possibly, probably. Is there a fit for Joe on the south side? Do the White Sox wake up and go, we have one of the best managers in baseball, doesn't have to move. There's no moving costs. You don't have to hire any movers. And does this make any sense? I don't know. Maybe it's crazy, but Joe will not have any problems getting a job if he wants to work. And all indications are he does want to work and manage again in Major League
Baseball. Joe would like Bridgeport, I think. He's, you know, it's similar to Hazleton
Joe,
in a way.
Joe used to hang out at Cork at the Park when he played for the Rays.
There you
He's good friends with Bill Guidy, the owner, and after games, he and Dave Wills, the voice of the Rays, would go over there and hang out. So, yes, Kev, he would love Bridgeport.
And I love Dave Wills as
Me
well.
Me too.
I mean, that's a that's pretty great. General question.
ESPN.
Well, he's speechless after that.
I love it. I love the idea.
Hey, can you imagine seeing a White Sox team that doesn't bunt for 162 games? I think that'd be a revelation.
Would you be watching the Cubs Network or NBC Sports Chicago with the Joe Show?
Well, I don't think I can afford Sinclair. I'm not sure what the price tag is.
Who
there.
Tells Renteria?
Not
he,
me.
He I mean, knows. He knows.
I mean, that's a pretty general question.
ESPN analyst Ryan Clark raised eyebrows when he claimed post-Monday Night Football glory that Mitchell Trubisky could become another Ryan Leaf or Jamarcus Russell if he doesn't improve. And by Tuesday, Clark was comparing Mitch to Tim Couch, Blaine Gabbert, and Christian Ponder. What will his QB comparison be after the Vikings game on Sunday?
Do we have to compare? I mean,
apparently.
Apparently we do, and you always want to comp. I think Ryan Clark actually made some really good points about Mitch Trubisky, and I thought that he went as people are prone to do in this day and age, I think he went a little extreme, a little too far, because there's nothing about Mitch Trubisky's resume or nothing about his success or failure to this point to reach expectations, meet expectations, that reminds you of Jamarcus Russell or, frankly, Ryan Leaf. Those guys were
that's
disasters.
Trubisky. Yeah,
you know,
flat-out bust.
Flat-out bust. Now, if you want to make a comparison to some of the other guys, you know, Christian Ponder possibly, but I don't think that was even accurate. I think these sound like reaches to me. I think Blake Bortles, if you want to look at him and the way that he had success in relative success in Jacksonville, and then he, you know, struggled, and then they got rid of him, that is a different equation. You know, after Sunday, I think we're going to be looking at Mitch. He's got a lot riding on this game. I think he proved a little bit against the Redskins, but it was the Redskins. This is a step up in class. He's got to be more efficient. He's got to be, you know, somewhat explosive. He's got to run this offense and be comfortable running this offense and respond to his coaching, the tough love coaching that Matt Nagy's providing. I'm not sure who we're going to be comparing him to after Sunday, but I don't like any of these comparisons that Ryan Clark made.
Yeah, I don't like those comparisons either. Thinking of names of guys, Trent Dilfer, Earl Morrow, Jeff Hostetler, guys that won Super Bowls. That,
Jose
that
Altuve.
Considered great quarterbacks by any stretch of the imagination. Now, the problem there is that they're all sort of journeyman guys.
Jim McMahon.
So Jim McMahon might be the best one because he was drafted by the Bears. And
I'm not being facetious.
I know you're not.
I think
was the quarterback of a World Series, a Super Bowl champion with a great defense. So that's kind of what you're looking for. The problem with guys like Trent Dilfer and the rest is that they were journeyman guys. You know, I've heard a lot of Alex Smith. Alex Smith was drafted by the Niners and ended up a recycled product and came into his own at the end of his career. So that's not what you want. You want a guy that wins with the team that drafts him. So If you're comparing him to Jim McMahon, that's great because it means that this defense, like the 85 Bears defense, is going to take a team to a Super Bowl and he's going to be the trigger man for it. So that's what the goal is. That's what you're hoping. You're hoping that they look good enough against the Vikings that you start thinking about quarterbacks of great defensive teams.
One question real quick. Jim McMahon, the Super Bowl year, where was he ranked? Was he middle of the pack quarterbacks that year?
Yeah, he was always injured. Remember, he was always going down. And yeah. And the great thing was when he came on against the Vikings. Of
all
teams,
in the roller dome.
And then and threw three touchdowns.
But I don't think he was ever a top 10 guy.
No.
Okay.
No.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
Mark Bulger? I mean, someone like that?
He was a pretty efficient quarterback. Right. I like that one. I have to look at that one. That's a really pretty good one. Similar skill set.
Mark Bulger is a six-round pick, though. I mean, we have to compare him to guys that were taken early in the first round. And I think that's why Ryan Clark went to Leaf and Russell, first of all, because those are two of the most notorious busts. But there were different circumstances, certainly, in the case of Ryan Leaf. He was battling some issues there. Jamarcus Russell was pretty much out of shape from the day that he debuted with Oakland. So I think that's a little bit different there. I mean, what we've seen from Mitch so far not just this year, but the entire time he's been here, he looks like Blaine Gabbert or Christian Ponder or Matt Cassel. And I think that this game on Sunday is a massive test because it's not Washington. It's not a terrible team. It's a very good team with a very good defense. And the book is out on Mitch. He's inaccurate when he's throwing downfield. He's going to dink and dunk. He's going to, you know, go for short yardage completions to try to move the ball down the field that way. That's the way they're operating. They've already had to scale back the offense and dumb things down for Mitch Trubisky. I don't know what his comparison is going to be after the game on Sunday, but it's not going to be any of the successful second-round picks that we've seen in the past decade or so.
Yeah, comparing Trubisky to Ryan Leaf and Jamarcus Russell is just not even fair. Not even fair. Yep. Sure, Gabbert and Christian Ponder, maybe that's a little getting a little closer there, sure. But I just dislike all of these comparisons. My hope is that, and I don't know what the chances really are against a great Vikings defense, but my hope is that he has a better game where he has success in both halves, not just a quarter, not just a half, and that we're not comparing him to anybody because we're talking about, wow, look at this steady incremental progress. The scariest thing to me, the scariest comparison I think of is you guys brought up the name Blake Bortles. I think of that really good Jaguars defense and just the little brief success that Blake Bortles had and then how it fizzled out as quick as it did. And I hope that's not Mitch Trubisky.
I think the current Mitch Trubisky is the Bears coaches are adapting to Mitch. I think somebody just said that, but I think that's the truth. I think, unfortunately, Coach Nagy wanted to put his system in with Mitch, but how I'm reading between the lines is they realize now that they have to adapt to Mitch's skill set, and it's not what they originally thought. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. I
think, and that's good coaching. That's what you have to do.
You realize what you have, and let's make the best of it.
Bad coaches try to force their scheme on players who aren't necessarily good fits for it.
That's right.
And what do bad GMs do? Trade up for guys like Mitch Trubisky.
Wow, man. Wow. You just can't stop yourself.
Well, I think that's a great question, and for us, it's pretty easy.
Do you like Matt Nagy's aw shucks, by golly explanation of cussing out his quarterback? And did you enjoy Mitch welcoming the verbal abuse?
I don't know why, but I love this story. I love Matt Nagy going off on Mitch and just dismissing him and telling him to shut the blank up because he's trying to listen to something that's being sent down. I think that's real football coach stuff. I think that Matt Nagy tries to be this kind of, but I think there's I like the idea that inside that man is a big competitor. Mitch was. He didn't seem embarrassed. He seemed amused by it. And I'm guessing he's been cussed out before and maybe done his share of it. And I like the way he handled it, too. I thought it was a really funny little exchange over the whole thing. And it perfectly dismissed it because no one is sitting there thinking like, oh, you know, Mitch doesn't like that sort of thing. Or, oh, well, Nagy, you know, he's not the same guy he pretends to be. I love the way they handled it. There was a certain genuineness to it. And I thought it was a great day for the Bears.
Yeah, because Mitch wasn't, it was kind of sheepish like that because it wasn't a news to him.
Yeah.
This is the way that he's always been treated by Matt Nagy. And I think that's what we get a glimpse of that sometimes when it's on national television and we have lip readers and we have interpreters and all this. But remember, this is a guy, Matt Nagy, be you. This is who he is. I mean, people see the real pleasant guy and he's joking around at press conferences and he's great with children and he's great with dogs and he's great with puppies. All these things, he's a great guy. But you're a football coach and you're a head football coach in the NFL. If you can't get in the face of your franchise quarterback, you don't belong on the sidelines. So I loved it. It's great. This is football. Welcome to professional sports. Welcome to sports in general. Coaches get angry. They raise their voice. And I thought Mitch handled that press conference as well as he's handled any.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%, David. I mean, these guys are they work so hard and there's so much, you know, game planning and tape watching and analysis and everything else that goes into it. And it all boils down to 60 minutes one time a week. So tensions are very high. You know, it's a very stressful environment during the course of a game. I love Matt Nagy getting in the face of Mitchell Trubisky. I like him getting in the face of anybody because that's what a head coach is supposed to do. This is football. And yes, more of that, please, if it's going to bring out performances like we saw from Mitch on Monday, where he's actually throwing the ball a little bit better, then yeah, keep throwing the whole book at him, as far as I'm concerned.
One of my favorite lines of the week so far was yours, Mully, when you said, I like a little football coach in my football coach of Matt Nagy. Yeah, he said this is because he has a heated side to him, but it's because we care. It's because he cares. So I like it, and I like what Trubisky said, too. He said getting yelled at like that fired him up. So I like it. This is their relationship. You see their relationship building in front of us. I like the dynamic that we're seeing.
I think I sent it to David. Somebody sent it to me. I thought it was doctored. I thought that somebody edited that in, but obviously it was real because they addressed it. I don't know. I loved it. It's football, man. I mean, it was great. And, you know, Kev Bo and I have those talks about once a week. He comes in my office and I grab those headphones.
Got to rattle my cage a little bit.
Come on! You know, and we get going. But no, I love it. And it's football. And I think it was terrific that they talked about it. And, you know, Mitch just, you know, he's kind of a blockhead, and he listened, and he went along.
You know what also is nice about it is that you see the other side of Nagy. It's not just the negative side where he comes out and he's screaming. He's also positively very demonstrative.
Well,
in a way that is, you know.
Sometimes he just kind of throws these bouquets at Mitch after games where you know he can't be too pleased, and he's talking about, well, we had that one play at the end, and you're just sitting there like, really? What do you really think? And then you get a glimpse of what he really thinks.
We know what he really thinks.
And you know, yeah. You know that he's okay. The guy's okay.
Yeah.
All right. That's the 5 and 5. 312-644-6767 is the telephone number. Thank you, Mitch. It's Mully and Haw on the Score.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.